right, thanks everybody for joining us on stage. Next, we have Hubbell with Chairman, President, CEO Dave Nord, and CFO Bill Sperry. Guys, thanks for being here. Dave, if you wouldn't just mind, you know, kind of monologuing here for a couple minutes, kind of state of the union, what you're seeing out there, and then we can get into Q&A.
Sure. Great. It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course.
It's always fun to come out and enjoy predictably nice weather. We had some good meetings this morning. Got some good feedback, some good questioning, but glad to be with the rest of the group. You know, in a nutshell, you've probably heard everybody else, it's all good. It's all good. It's certainly relative to what we've experienced for almost the last decade, that's true. I mean, as you know, it's not always all good, but in our case, there's a whole lot of good going on. You know, the end markets and all of our end markets are up and, you know, continue to show, you know, positive trends. You know, we saw that when we took up our outlook for end markets at the end of the second quarter. Price cost is, you know, starting to come back as we had predicted, turning positive certainly by the end of the year. And I think that's a good thing. Tariffs, you know, are not a good thing, and so that's put a little damper on that trend, but we're going to work through that. Aclara acquisition integration going very well. We're very pleased with that, and a lot of good learnings, but certainly a great future potential for our business. And I think just operationally, we're doing a lot of good things in the business. As we've talked about, we've added some really strong talent to the team to help us get to the next level of operating efficiently in our plants. So, you know, I think things are overall good. You know, there's always challenges as we go along, and we've got to navigate those, but that's our job, and I think we've got a great team to do that. So.
Great. So I think we can finally retire sloppy and choppy for a few more years.
I know. I wish I had a copyright on that and got some royalties, but I'm happy to pass that on. Thanks.
Maybe just to dive in on the topic that I think has been a bigger discussion for you guys over the last couple quarters, price costs. You mentioned, you know, hoping to exit the year closer to neutral. If you layer tariffs on that, maybe, you know, it takes a tad longer. But just remind us, you know, where things have gone well there, how the price yield has layered in, conversations with customers. It seems like in this environment, the ability to get price has been pretty good, you know, maybe on a lag in some cases, but yeah, everyone out there is conditioned now to accept price. Maybe talk about how that has gone, any update you guys see on that price cost trajectory here.
No, that's right. I think first of all, we put out, I think back in May, the chart that showed how we saw price cost trending in our business, with it really starting to turn positive in the third quarter and fourth quarter. And I think we see those trends still continuing. Price is never easy, but in some markets, in some products, in some businesses, it's certainly easier, and certainly when the collective environment, you know, is dealing with cost increases, and it provides a good basis. So we've seen success in most of our businesses that, you know, leads us to still be confident that we'll be able to do what we've said. You know, the power business is recovering cost. You know, they had, as you recall, a little bit of more of a lag because they were still working off of prices they maintained as commodity costs have come down. So, but they're coming back, and you know, they have more of a lag when they have contracts on blankets. So we really try not to break those earlier in the year. They did have to make an adjustment just because of the rapid rise in steel. But the rest, they've implemented cost increases and price increases on their stock business. And that's usually an indicator to the blanket customers. It gives an order of magnitude of what they're likely to expect as next year's blankets come up. So, you know, I think, and that's, you know, overall a very key element, because as we exit the year and we're starting to realize that price, that sets up well going into 19. I think the electrical businesses overall have been, you know, continually implementing price increases where necessary based on cost. So that's kind of a more More real-time, there's still probably a 60, 90-day lag in getting those just because of the process. But, you know, we've seen pretty good realization on that. There's pockets where you get more challenge, but overall pretty good. And I think on the lighting side, I think the good news on lighting is that we've seen a bit of a stabilization at least. You know, not strength, but certainly stabilization, which is a big change and I think a positive change. We hope that continues. There's
flat is the new up.
Right, flat is the new up. And there's signs, you know, other industry participants putting in price increases, which is, you know, a good indicator of at least the trend and the intention, just waiting to see it be realized, is what it's all about.
Have tariffs altered the trajectory or changed the pricing environment at all in lighting? I know that's been one of the few industries that folks have talked about as maybe being pro-tariff. It's probably an oversimplification, but certainly one where there's an identified, you know, set of bad actors that may get a little bit smaller. Is that something that you've felt in the marketplace, you know, have any context on?
I don't know that I can attribute specifically feeling it, but, you know, it certainly, you would think, is a contributor to more of the market participants putting in price increases than they had in the past, just because there's only so much you can absorb. And that's one that's an explicit, you know, cost increase that I think is well known, and there's not much you can do about it, and it came on, and the debate in some camps is whether it's a surcharge or just a price increase. And so that's changed a bit of the dynamic, for sure. I think it's contributed to it.
And then just on the power side, I mean, I think, you know, you and Bill both would have characterized that a few years ago as maybe over-earning a bit in a deflationary environment, that customers didn't, you know, necessarily claw back that price, and maybe when there's inflation, it's harder to get it. It seems like the messaging now is more about we'll get there with time, not that that is a permanent gap to close. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, I know that we won't really get to see the core business much anymore because of Aclara, so some of this will be invisible on the consolidated level. But can we get back to, you know, some of those prior margins just by getting over the hump on price maybe in the next year?
I don't really like the characterization of over-earning. But we have said that, you know, we were, you know, when the margins, you know, breached 20%, there was a lot of tailwind coming from the lower commodity costs as we maintained price. We have always said we believe that's a very strong high teens margin business. You know, so when we breached 20, that was maybe a period of time of beneficial price cost. But certainly there's no reason why that's not going to continue to be a high teen margin business in the foreseeable future, and could be higher. Could be higher, but that's our target. The Aclara business comes in at a little bit lower margin, still very solid, you know, mid-teen margin business in the long term. So I think high-teen margin business and targets are very much in the cards.
And then just thinking about the demand fundamentals of that business, you've had a good run here the last couple of years on T&D spending, and it seems like that's still in general continuing, and things like distributed power probably don't take away from that in the medium term. What's your sense on, you know, that business's ability to kind of maybe pick up over where it's been, you know, the prior 5 years where it was more of a GDP or maybe even GDP minus a little, and it seems to be moving into the GDP plus camp? Is that a fair assessment? Do you think this is kind of sticky growth? You know, what are you seeing in the market as far as that goes?
No, I think that's a fair assessment. We are seeing trends that are in excess of GDP levels. You know, not, you know, wildly in excess, but being in excess at all is different than the trend has been. We've seen a lot more activity in that market, which is a bit of what we've all been waiting for to see. We knew there's a need. We knew there's pent up demand. It was frustrating, surprising, a bit mysterious as to why it wasn't happening. So to the extent that we're seeing it now, we're certainly optimistic on that.
And then just thinking about kind of the core electrical business, we'll leave lighting out at most more the component side. Clearly construction and industrial and energy are all, big drivers of that business, especially the heavier industries. Those seem like they picked up more recently from you, for you, just based on the conference call commentary. I know that energy specifically, though, you've historically been a bit more offshore than not. How have you seen that trending just based on, where you approach the market?
Can I take that one?
Yeah. So, we've got that 10% of our pie exposed to oil and gas, and about half of that, I would say, is oil. And certainly, the rigs that are in deep water have much more content. You're basically talking about small cities, including residences, to extract the oil, and there's a lot of explosion-proof electrical material that's needed on those. So as that shifted to an onshore business, we certainly lost, a lot of volume. But now the rig count has grown exponentially onshore. There's just less content to it. But that's really still, at this point, kind of rebounded from its lows and growing healthy. The other side of oil and gas, on the gas side, we're serving with components that go into the last mile of the gas distribution infrastructure, and that's growing really, really strongly. So there you see trends that are not so much rig count driven, but much more around the attractive fuel price there, more homes, more businesses using it as a source of energy, and the nature of an old infrastructure that requires a lot of upkeep maintenance to prevent leakage and damage and whatnot. So that side has been very good. You mentioned the heavy industrial, and again, really nice rebound out of the 15-16 lull, and we're seeing good growth there, as you mentioned. And then non-res, just in general, has ex-lighting has been, very solid, consistent grower.
On the offshore component, though, I think we've heard a bit more optimism from some of those players lately. Remind us where you're at in that selling cycle. Would that be something that maybe shows up more next year than in real time today?
Definitely later. So that we've really got two different product lines there. One is more of a hardware business, which would be nearer term, and the other are communication systems, which have more of a selling cycle lead time. And you are seeing inquiries on that side picking up, so I think there is maybe some optimism there.
And just remind us, how far below peak are we in that business?
Yeah, we've been down, about a third from where we were, so it's still that's lost, nice volume with nice profit. That's down.
It is one of the higher margin businesses in the portfolio still, right?
Yeah.
So just turning over to, what I think is a pretty exciting story on the Aclara side, certainly, a different business than kind of core Hubbell. But a lot of early optimism. Seems like the growth there has been impressive. You talked at EPG about a big project funnel, a big backlog. You've had, I think, double the time, owning the business since May.
Mm-hmm.
Any characterization or any, new observations that you've had over that period, either, positive, negative, or just surprises in owning?
Certainly, overall continues to, track as anticipated, which is, for the most part, which, for a deal that size, is positive. No major negatives. The integration is going quite well. I think, one of the things that we really see and really appreciate is we anticipated going in that there were many, many complementary attributes to the two businesses, whether it's the markets they serve, the sales force, even their cultures. And as we've put them together and integrated and maintained the strength of both and actually built off the strength of the individuals, it's gone extraordinarily well. Great talent on both sides, great processes that we'll continue to share those. I think the market has been very positive. We're still seeing double-digit growth there. A little bit of a different mix. There's been more strength on the meter side. The comm side has been, more as anticipated. And the only learnings that we've had is on the business that, you know, helps support the bid process, which is an installation business. You recall that Aclara was really focused around the municipal and co-op markets. In many of those customers, you know, they're looking for a turnkey solution. Having the ability to provide not just the meters and the comms, but the installation capability was a valuable proposition for them. It was a, you know, a good margin business, not at the same level. I think one of the learnings is as you've got into bigger projects in certain areas, like urban areas, the dynamics of that, the ability to execute on that is much more challenging. The profitability on that, you know, is not at the same level, and that's something that we're working through, and there's a lot of learnings. You know, there was a business that was relatively new to Aclara, so they're learning as well. You know, other than that, it's all been very positive, and we've seen opportunities that have been presented in the public power systems businesses where we've been able to bring in Aclara and vice versa, which is one of the key elements that we were looking at in that combination.
I think you spoke when the deal was originally announced about that collaborative or complementary channel pattern between Aclara and power systems that they serve different parts of the market. Both parts could be buyers of both. How is that introduction process going?
I think the introduction process is going quite well. Ultimately realizing, you know, business out of it, you know, takes a little time. It's the utility industry. You're either in a position of having to try to displace an incumbent, or just build a knowledge base around by the, you know, the decision maker in the channel, whether it's the engineering group, the ops group. Both of our businesses are highly regarded by the respective customers, but, you know, across, there's an awareness education that has to go on. To date, it's gone very well, but the results we expect we'll start to see next year.
Got it. And just remind us on the profitability mix there, Bill. Dave mentioned that the metering has been a bit stronger and comms more within expectation. Does that have an output on margin mix that we should think of, or is it close enough for rounding?
Yeah, it does, except that the meter volume has been so strong that we kind of get back to where
EBIT dollars higher,
correct.
EBIT margin a little lower.
Correct.
Got it. And then thinking about that business specifically as it pertains to tariffs, I think, you know, there's been, you know, all sorts of capacitors and electrical components that go into the smart meter industry that get imported. So have you seen any supply chain challenges given that you're growing quickly and there's been some tightness and some trade issues on stuff that goes inside the box?
No, that's right. That is, you know, it's not so much the cost component implication in that business. It's actually been one that's probably most impacted by supply chain, just extended lead times, availability, you know, of the product. So that's something that, you know, but they've been working on that. They've seen that building up over time and have had, you know, to navigate that, you know, either through advanced buys, in some cases higher pricing, but, you know, that's all part of, you know, how you're managing through that. So.
And do you think you've been able to generally pass that through to the extent prices have gone up?
To date, we have. It hasn't been a big cost headwind for us. It's been more of an availability challenge, but it really hasn't, we haven't seen it slow down or delay any of our activity in any meaningful way.
Got it. And I think the last time you quoted the pipeline funnel there, I think it was $3 billion in the funnel and $1 billion in the backlog, which I think the funnel especially was a lot bigger than people would have expected early on. Sounds like it was bigger than you guys would have expected too.
Mm-hmm.
Has that continued to build, or is that kind of a stable level that we should think about here for a while as, you know, the funnel empties too as you convert?
Right. We're seeing the funnel, it's more of a stable level. You know, that opportunity list continues to maintain at a very high level. And our success rate continues at, you know, we've seen it continue at historic levels. You know, so, you know, it's pretty stable. You know, you have, you know, in project business, you know, the backlog itself will vary, you know, as those projects are completed. But because we have such a big pipeline of potential new projects, it's very easy to re- it's typical to refill that.
Got it. And just thinking about where you can take that business longer term, I mean, obviously, kind of by definition, there's a lot of data coming off of it. And when there's data, there's an opportunity to analyze and monetize. And, you know, I'm not entirely certain where the ownership structure of all that data comes out or if that's something you could tap into as a way to layer on a bit more, you know, diagnostic or analytics. But is that something that is potentially a future roadmap of the business? Is that something that, you know, your customers ask about today? You know, maybe just a little bit more color on how you see that playing out.
Yeah. So there's an example of grid monitoring, is something where now that we've got the devices and the data, it's something that we can really help people find areas of leakage, areas of early maintenance detection that are really, really valuable to the economics of the functioning, of the infrastructure. We also had an example, last week where the smart meter detected a heightened amount of energy usage, which caused a truck to go roll. And they found that it was in a dangerous pre-fire kind of condition that where the meter actually is preventing damage, you know, to the structures by because it's detecting. And so I think you're dead on that. There's a lot of important data, and we feel we're really well positioned to collect it, look at it, and help our clients run safer and more efficient infrastructure for sure.
Now, I think the grid monitoring piece is the smallest part of that asset. Has there been a historical reticence by the customers to want to connect the two, or is there a different competitive field that taps into grid monitoring where it's hard to have an attachment? Just trying to understand, you know, how that can grow or what
it
is.
Yeah, it may even be the reverse where they might ask you to do some grid monitoring that would then actually maybe be the precursor to a big comms installation where they could see how the two would work better. So that it actually works a little bit maybe the reverse of what you're saying, where it could be the leading product rather than the lagging product.
So there's no real natural impediment to be able to bundle, or so bundling ends up being a dirty word for most people, but associate the two in terms of the customer.
No, I think it's an advantage, not an impediment. Yeah.
And does that end up being more of a product sale, or is there kind of a recurring model to it, as customers tap into that? Is it feel more like kind of a SaaS model?
Yeah, I wouldn't, maybe not quite that strong, and I think the model's still being, you know, formulated, but probably not as strong as you're thinking of a SaaS model.
Got it.
Although there, I think there are applications where that could evolve.
I would imagine, as with most services that touch that industry, the margins are accretive.
They are. And because I think the bundle works, I think it also has pull-through. And so it's a good, it's kind of a, you know, we call it more solution selling maybe than software as a service per se.
So one thing that comes out of this is that it sounds like with a big funnel, a lot of growth that you're enjoying today, it could get even bigger, maybe even broaden out into other areas of that business. Is there the bandwidth of the organization from a sales perspective, to handle that? So I know when some of these properties change hands that they're, you know, accustomed to a certain lifestyle or a certain market size, and as that grows, you know, there's some growing pains that go along with it. Do you feel like there might need to be reinvestment, or is it properly tooled up to continue to grow at this type of pace?
I think the sales teams on both sides are very excited about the opportunities because they see that. And, you know, but I also think that excitement is tempered by, you know, who's going to do it. So you're right. But we continue to expand on that. And it's not something that is a major obstacle or, I would say, a major investment because you're going to invest as that market develops, as those opportunities develop. But certainly, there's a need to continue to expand and build off of the base that both businesses had. You know, if the strategy's right and you're executing and see the higher volume that comes from those synergies, it doesn't come solely on the existing business. It's got to be something incremental.
Got it. And is that a particularly technical sales force required to do that, where finding more people or training them up is a process, or is that a bit more of a fungible sales model?
No, there's an expertise in that workforce, depending on the product, depending on the customer. But, you know, there is an element of knowledge that occurs. You know, and that's where the value comes in both of our businesses, because there's a very experienced foundation in that, where there's a knowledge and reliability and consistency in that sales force that's out there. Because you're dealing with, and particularly maintaining and selling to existing customers, you know, you have to know that customer, and they have to know you. But selling to new customers, they look for that same, because they are operating in that same kind of culture, a very, very disciplined, very conservative, a very consistent, with depth of knowledge, in many areas.
So thinking about capital allocation, I mean, clearly, Aclara was, you know, largest deal in Hubbell's history. I think, you know, it sounds like you're very happy with it, early days. There's a lot of runway ahead. Does it shift your view on the types of properties that you could be or should be looking at?
It does. It shifts somewhat, only because when you look at, you know, Aclara was put together, as an example, one of the reasons we were so interested is because it brought a technology capability to Hubbell that we were building, but not at the pace to really address the market that was out there. And even within Aclara, you know, they didn't put together what they have and say that's it. They have a lot more to add to it. So we would expect that we would even be adding to that portfolio, as well as our existing portfolio, in some of the core areas that we have. There's still, you know, a whole lot of fragmentation in the industry, in product offerings that would be very valuable within our portfolio, and we'll continue to look at those. You know, that's how we've been built. We have, you know, particularly when you look at our history over the last 5 to 10 years, many of our acquisitions are, by comparison to Aclara, small, but, you know, these $15, $25 to $50 million acquisitions have added a lot of value in our portfolio, and so we'll continue to do those as well.
Has that market changed at all? I think, you know, everyone who's active in the industrial M&A space has noted higher multiples and, you know, kind of a lack of ability to connect buyers and sellers based on, you know, price disconnects. Is that something that's shown up in this market as well?
Yeah, I would say that we see a positive correlation between multiple and size. So when you get down to where Dave was describing, in that zip code, you can get some very reasonable multiples. I think as you start to talk bigger and bigger, you know, the multiples go from 8 and 8.5, you know, you get up to 10 to 12, and that is an important consideration as you get a lot bigger.
But even Aclara wasn't particularly expensive in the grand scheme of things, certainly relative to the growth profile.
I agree.
Are there other properties out there that fit a similar mold? It sounds like maybe not. Is it just casting a wider net beyond
the normal market? Well, still to be determined. I think that, as Dave described kind of where we're looking, you know, we'd been talking for years and years that a $1 billion deal was something that we could do. And I think it's actually quite informative that in fact we could, and that they're out there, you know, that the balance sheet is there to support that size of investing, that there are properties that fit as well as they've described. So that I think that's pretty informative to our acquisition strategy, to recognize that that's, you know, that's out there, and you can kind of get 4 or 5 years worth of investing done in one go, and that's pretty constructive.
No, and I think that's you know, and keep in mind, as Bill said, you know, we've said for a long time that we expect that we would do something along that size range, and this wasn't the only transaction that was being considered. There are always other transactions. And some of them, many of them are still there, and there's others beyond that. I think where we are, have been for the last 6 to 8 months at least, is a bit of a pause because when we did Acclara, we made a conscious decision that we were going to focus on the successful integration and implementation, as well as generating the cash to pay down some of the debt to be in a position to continue down that path. So, you know, it's likely that in the future, and there's many that are still on the list, a lot of factors go into it, but I would see that we would still continue to do that.
From a balance sheet perspective, when do you think you kind of hit the end of the moratorium, self-imposed, of course? You know, when do you think you'd be comfortable to start looking at deals again?
Yeah, I'd say as of now, we would consider ourselves to be back in the market. I think the first 6 months were really important, A, to show that the business was functioning well, B, to show that it was integrated and plugged and played well within the Hubbell operating system. I think balance sheet-wise, you know, I think the first year of our ownership, we can see delevering, you know, and getting towards, you know, half a turn even. And so I think in the kind of deal size Dave was talking about, those smaller ones, I'd say, you know, second half of the year, we'd be back in business. I think as it delevers, you know, towards two, you know, I think we're back in business towards larger things.
And then just thinking about the other side of the equation, you know, maybe portfolio exits. I think, Dave, you mentioned a few months back that there are perhaps parts of lighting that don't make as much sense or might not make as much sense longer term. I think with maybe the market stabilizing, pricing getting a little bit better, that perhaps some of the, you know, the distressed sale elements would no longer apply and the multiple may not reflect that. Does it change your view now that the market feels better, that it's a better time to look at that? Or does it say, well, now these markets have lived through the worst and we just want to keep going?
Well, I think I have to go back to that comment. It was really based on there were parts of the business, i.e., products that we were selling or brands that we were selling that might not fit the portfolio, not necessarily. So, you know, you could exit a brand, but it was more around selective products that weren't meeting the profit threshold.
Pruning versus sales.
Pruning, or even in some cases, and one of the things that has been occurring is a focus on, can you make them more profitable? Is it a pricing issue? Is it a cost issue? Is it a market competitive issue? And if you can't, then you have to do something. But there's still a lot going on in evaluating those, and the things that have been discontinued have been more dealt with through discontinuing a product offering. Okay.
And the part of the market that has felt better, as I understand it, is more on the large projects. Is that a fair assessment, and is that what you're seeing in the business?
Certainly, the project business has shown signs of, you know, activity, more inquiries, more action, and so that's been a positive development combined with stabilization of pricing. You know, those two things have really good sense. You know, the outlook is for continued growth in non-res construction, and so there's no reason to believe that, you know, lighting wouldn't follow along with that. If you have the pricing stabilization and ideally improvement, and you see the signs of the projects coming in, that certainly bodes well for the potential future of lighting. We've just, you know, lived through a long period of very tough pricing environments, market environments that we're still in a, when we see it, we'll say it.
Fair enough. With that, I think we can open up the floor to questions.
You're doing a good job asking questions.
Guess so. Bill, Dave, thanks so much.
All right.
Thanks,
Josh.